Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today, we are really diving deep into Jennifer Egan's The Candy House. It came out in 2022. Now, if you know Egan's work, you know she's more than just a novelist. She's almost like a cultural anthropologist, especially for our digital age.
That's such a good way to put it.
Yeah.
She seems to capture the feeling, the zeitgeist of how technology is changing us, sometimes before we even see it ourselves.
Exactly. And The Candy House, it's connected to her Pulitzer winner, A Visit from the Goon Squad, right? Same universe.
It is. It revisits some characters, that whole interconnected web.
Yeah.
But it does something more, I think. It's not just looking at the digital world. It pushes like 30 years into the future. And it really digs into these huge questions about technology and what it even means to be human anymore.
So our mission today, for you listening, is to sort of map out this transformation. We need to look at the novel's structure, which is pretty wild, and the big ideas about consciousness, and crucially, the consequences, right? What happens when a society basically goes all in on total transparency?
Right. And to do that, we absolutely have to start with the invention at the heart of it all. The big one.
Okay, yeah, let's unpack that. What is this this core technology that just changes everything?
So it's a system developed by this tech visionary, Biggs Bouton, who's a really complex character, kind of tormented. He calls it Own Your Unconscious. And this isn't just, you know, like cloud storage for photos or emails. It's way beyond that.
Okay.
It allows people to externalize their entire consciousness. We're talking every memory, every thought, even fleeting sensations, the stuff you're not even aware of.
Wow. So the raw feeling of experience, not just the memory of it.
Exactly. And you upload all this raw data of being human into a massive shared digital space. They call it the collective consciousness.
A collective consciousness.
Okay.
And the promise is...
Well, the promise is pretty utopian on the surface. Bix and his company, Mandala, they argue this can end loneliness.
Yeah.
Eliminate misunderstanding because you can literally step inside someone else's head.
Total knowledge, radical empathy sounds amazing.
It does. But the price, that's the core tension, isn't it?
Right. The price is total surrender privacy. Every single bit of your inner life out there.
Completely. And this is where Egan brings in that amazing metaphor right away. The Candy House.
Ah, yes. Hansel and Gretel.
Exactly. It looks beautiful, irresistible. All this connection, all this knowledge, like a feast. But you know the story. It's a trap.
Something that looks inviting but might actually consume you, dissolve your sense of self.
Precisely. And what makes Biggs Bouton so interesting is that he's not like a mustache-twirling villain. He's genuinely driven by this search for connection. He got the idea partly from anthropology, thinking about how humans always try to externalize thought through art, writing, rituals.
So he sees this as just the next logical step, maybe, the ultimate externalization.
Kind of. He wants something profound, maybe even transcendence. But he's haunted by the consequences, the things he didn't foresee when he built this machine.
Yeah. The road to total surveillance paved with, well, maybe not good intentions, but understandable ones. Okay, so people have this technology. How do they react? You mentioned a split.
A huge split.
Yeah.
Society basically divides into two camps, the sharers and the eluders.
Sharers embrace it, eluders resist. Makes sense.
Exactly. Sharers dive into the collective, trading privacy for that promised connection. Eluders try to stay off the grid, valuing mystery, hiddenness. The private self.
And the novel explores this through different characters, right? Can you give us a few examples? Show us the human cost?
Sure. Well, there's Biggs himself, obviously still grappling with what he's unleashed. Creation and Consequence, that's his arc. But then you have his son, Gregory Amori. He's a key eluder.
Ah, the creator's son resists the creation.
Classically. Gregory lives completely analog. He's a writer. And he makes this argument that the collective destroys something vital. He calls them the fictions. The sort of self-deceptions, the curated stories we tell ourselves about ourselves to make sense of things. He thinks those are essential to identity.
That's interesting. Because the promise of the collective is truth, right? No more lies, no more self-deception. Isn't that better?
Well, that's the big question Egan throws at you, isn't it?
Right.
Gregory would argue that pure, uninterpreted truth, just raw data, maybe that's meaningless. He thinks we need our narratives, our subjective takes, even if they aren't 100% accurate. He's fighting for the right to have an inner life that isn't shared or validated by the network.
A fight for subjectivity itself. Uh-huh. Okay, who else?
Then there's Chris Salazar. You might remember his dad, Benny, from Goon Squad.
Right, the music producer.
Yeah. So Chris actually works at Mandala, Bix's company.
Yeah.
And he uses the collective, dives into the archive, trying to piece together his family history, understand his dad, who he's estranged from.
Does it work? Does he find connection through the data?
That's the bittersweet part. He gets the facts, the memories, the data points, but it doesn't really give him the emotional connection or the closure he wants. He knows what happened, but he can't change it, can't really feel it in a way that heals.
So the data doesn't equal understanding or relationship.
Not necessarily. And then you have characters like Rebecca Mari, who's a spy. Talk about paradox.
Yeah.
Trying to keep secrets and find secrets in a world built on total openness.
She must be constantly navigating that tension.
Absolutely. But maybe the most chilling angle comes through Lulu. She's a citizen agent.
Okay, what does that mean in this context?
It means she uses the collective not for connection, but for control. For the state, essentially. She gets really good at something called proximity estimations.
Proximity estimations sounds technical.
It is. She uses the sheer mass of all that shared consciousness, thoughts, memories, sensations, all aggregated to predict behavior.
Like algorithmically figure out where people will be, who they'll meet, what they might do, based on everyone's unconscious data.
Exactly that. It's weaponizing the collective, turning this tool supposedly for empathy into a tool for surveillance, manipulation, even violence.
That's terrifying. It takes the initial premise and just twists it.
And what's really stark is what it does to her. Lulu becomes cold, detached, almost algorithmic herself. It suggests that being immersed in that much raw data can actually strip away your own humanity, your empathy.
Wow. So the very tool for empathy ends up destroying it in the user.
In her case, absolutely.
And Egan doesn't just tell us this through plot, right? The way the book is written mirrors this fragmentation.
Oh, completely. The structure is key. It's not a straight line at all. It's 13 interconnected stories jumping across decades, characters weaving in and out. Polyphonic is the word.
It feels like you, the reader, are trying to piece things together, almost like using the collective yourself.
That's exactly the effect, I think. It forces you to be an active participant, connecting the dots, figuring out the timeline, understanding the echoes across generations. It mirrors navigating that overwhelming digital consciousness.
And the stylistic choices within chapters are just brilliant, too.
They really are. Like, there's one chapter that's told entirely through emails.
Right. It perfectly captures that feeling of corporate life, kind of frantic and disembodied.
Yeah.
Your identity just dissolves into the inbox.
Yeah, it's uncanny. And then Lulu's chapter, the spy chapter.
Written in the second person, like a how-to manual. Chillin'.
So effective. It makes her seem like just an instrument following instructions. A shell.
And the final chapter, the language itself starts to feel different.
Yes. The syntax, the rhythm, it almost mimics a machine algorithm. It blurs that line between human thought and machine processing right there on the page.
So the form is inseparable from the content. The way she tells the story is part of the story about technology's impact.
Absolutely. The medium is the message in a very literal sense here.
Okay, so pulling back from the structure, what are the big thematic takeaways? What does this all mean, especially for us, you know, living right now with our own versions of sharing and data?
Well, the most obvious one is this clash, privacy versus transparency. Egan really pushes on it. In the world of the candy house, privacy basically becomes a luxury good. Only the very rich can afford to stay unconnected, to keep their inner lives private.
That's a really sharp social critique. When something fundamental like interiority, like having a private self, becomes a commodity, what does that say about the society technology is creating?
It points to a new kind of inequality, definitely. A cognitive inequality, almost.
And what about memory? The collective seems to promise perfect recall.
Yeah, but the novel questions that. It suggests memory isn't like a perfect recording we just replay. It's more fluid, something we constantly reconstruct, like telling ourselves a story.
So trying to digitize and share the raw memory might fundamentally misunderstand how our minds actually work. It misses the interpretation, the narrative part.
Exactly. It undermines that human process of making meaning out of experience, which involves selecting, forgetting, shaping.
Which brings us back to Gregory the Looter and his defense of fictions, this theme of authenticity versus performance.
Right. And the paradox is, if everyone else is sharing, can you really be invisible? Gregory himself wonders about it. Is choosing to be unseen just another way of being seen, a different kind of performance?
Like a statement in itself. Maybe true escape is impossible once the system is everywhere?
It might be. The novel doesn't give easy answers. It shows technology as both things at once, amazing and awful, freeing and trapping.
Which loops back perfectly to the title, doesn't it? That quote you mentioned.
Yeah, the candy house was beautiful and terrible, exactly as promised.
It delivered exactly what it offered, the good and the bad, all mixed together. Connection and knowledge, but also disillusion.
It really leaves you thinking about the value of, well, of not knowing everything. The value of mystery, of privacy, of having that space inside that's just yours. Maybe that hiddenness is actually essential for real identity and even for real connection.
Yeah, it's a powerful counter-narrative to our current obsession with sharing everything. That final thought the novel kind of leaves hanging. Is knowing everything just another way of knowing nothing truly meaningful?
Does all that raw data, unfiltered information, actually lack the interpretation, the story, the meaning that makes understanding possible?
It makes a compelling case for fiction, for the stories we tell, maybe even for the necessary gaps in our knowledge. Something essential gets lost in perfect transparency.
A really profound thought to sit with.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by a Akatra Foundation.